Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone. Tommy here. The musical we're talking about today deals with some heavy topics. It's talking a lot about, among other things, suicide. And this can be, if you're in the kind of position where this can affect you, you might know about it. And so, you know, think about it before you listen to the show. This kind of stuff can be triggering, of course. You know, Jimmy and I both want you to know that it's okay to not be okay. And please do not hesitate to call. There's a wonderful service. There's a suicide hotline in America. It's 800-273-TALK. That's 800-273-8255. Give them a call. Or if you're in the UK, 116-123, Jimmy tells me, you can talk with the Samaritans. Or wherever your nationality is, you know, give it a quick Google. It'll pop right up with something that can help you, with someone who can talk to you. And, you know, make sure that tomorrow is a good day, too. Just wanted to drop this in here to make sure you're okay. All right, on with the podcast. Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with Bloody Marys and blood packs.
Right? I mean, that's...
It's true. It's a little dark, but it's true.
Yeah. Well, they're slowly becoming show appropriate.
Blood
these
packs?
Bits as well. No, the your weeklies.
Oh, I understand. Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is, we're just going to be one big, I don't know, booze fest.
We already are one big booze fest.
Damn right. Speaking of, What's on your lips?
I've got a corn nut cocktail.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got a Slurpee.
Ooh,
I thought
fun.
It was obvious.
You know, there's actually the gay bar in Chicago sell their hallmark is alcoholic Slurpees.
Excellent. I thought you were going to say they're called Slurpee.
No, but that would be a great gay bar name.
Shotgun.
Yes. Why are we drinking these things today, Jimmy?
What a fabulous question, Tommy. Let me answer it with another. With a statement at the start. So the show that we're going to be talking about today, Thomas, has had substantial rewrites for its licensable school version, including the entire rewriting of one of its songs. The creators have said that they actually like this new song better than the original and are considering including it in all future versions. What show?
What show? A lot of people got this one.
A lot of people got this one.
Would you call this our most highly anticipated podcast?
I think it could be.
I think it is
that
too.
That scares me.
Hopefully we'll do it right. We're talking about Heathers today.
Heathers the musical. I'm not gonna lie, I'm scared.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. People,
what if
people
we get it wrong?
Love this show. I think people, at least contemporarily, the people in our world, our Broadway.com generation, mm-hmm. I think adore Heathers in a way that's feels different than some other shows.
Yeah, definitely. And we're definitely going to tease out why that might be the case, because that is definitely the case. That isn't a conjecture moment. That is cold hard facts. We've got some stats for you guys.
Yeah.
So, what is it?
So, Heathers has book, music, and lyrics by Lawrence O'Keefe, who did Legally Blonde and Bat Boy, and Kevin Murphy, who worked on Reefer Madness, and is, of course, based on the 1988 cult classic film by the same name.
Yep. They were brought together, Lawrence O'Keefe, Kevin Murphy, they were brought together on this project. I think it's the first time that they'd worked together. Mm-hmm. after writing it, they had a stage reading back in 2010 in New York City with Annalee Ashford, Jeremy Jordan, which is fabulous. Then they went over to LA and had a really successful sellout tryout there. And then they hopped over to the East Coast and opened off Broadway in 2014. And
it's where the story ends, too.
Yeah,
basically.
They had no Broadway journey.
Which is, I mean, we will absolutely, hashtag subtitle of our music, of our podcast. We'll talk about this in a bit. But it is, for as successful as a musical it's been, it's very strange that it never had a Broadway run.
Yeah. But there's lots of things surrounding that, and there may be plans, there may be...
Who knows?
There's also lots of things going on.
There's talk of a television series. And
which is...
Weird. Who knows? Yeah,
exactly. So Heathers, if you don't know, basically, well, Heathers the musical, we're going to be concentrating on that, obviously, basically sees a teenage girl called Veronica Sawyer. And she is, well, was a geek and gets transformed by kind of working her way into the popular clique. Or click, if you are in the States.
If you're American.
called The Heathers, which is populated by Heather Chandler, Heather Duke, and Heather McNamara.
Heather Chandler is the leader of them all.
She's a mythic bitch.
Yes, exactly. It's very... This movie, at least, existed as kind of a prototype for that kind of Mean Girls-style movie, at least in the first half.
Yes.
It's about the perils of high school life and like trying to fit in and things like that. But then Veronica meets the new kid at school, JD. JD is part of a kind of a drifter family and ends up at this high school, and some pretty serious chaos ensues.
Yeah, it kind of gets flipped on its head.
Yeah.
And murders are afoot.
Yeah, it's really this turns into a dark comedy very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think one of the darkest of dark comedies.
Yeah, certainly on a musical theater stage. Like,
yeah,
you know, where someone like Sweeney Todd, who, you know, has his fair share of murder, is slightly dark comedy, it airs more on the dark side.
Yeah.
This kind of treads the tightrope.
Yeah. Well, and it was where, like, I don't know about you, Jimmy, but I'm not particularly worried about barbers slitting people's throats and getting away with it, and then, like, you know, their patrons being baked into meat pies.
Whereas, not visited London. That's all I'm saying.
Slashing left and right.
Right.
Whereas, like, some of the topics of Heathers, you know, teen suicide, school bombings, the whole, you know, school shootings, like, these are very real, dark kind of things that, like... The 1988 movie was certainly progressive in addressing them in such a flippant way. And then the musical, too, I would say.
Exactly. And I think because it's so out there, and because it's very quite garish in the way it deals with these things, it kind of creates this weird heightened sense of reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
And particularly in the movie, from the outset, you get that, as you get this weird, like, sequence where basically they're playing croquet and they're using Veronica's head as the end post.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the opening of the film, and you kind of get straight away, okay, cool, we're not in serious land here.
Right.
And the musical has a similar...
Yeah, it sets you up too. Like, there, when the Heathers enter, the opening number in this musical is a wonderful epitome of how to do an exposition exposition song in musical theater.
Yeah.
But like, at the Heather's entrance, which is, of course, exactly as ethereal as it needs to be, and all the other characters are talking about, like, their opinions of the Heathers, and, like, I wish I could be in love with the Heathers, or I want to be like them. And then the one character is like, I wish I could tie a Heather up in a warehouse and take pictures of her and leave her to be eaten by the rats.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just in the middle of nowhere, and it's just this little hint that, like, this is going to be maybe a little more ridiculous than you think. But maybe not. And, like, there's a darker edge to this that we won't get at until maybe halfway through Act One.
Yep. Yep, it kind of comes out of nowhere. So let's get into it and talk a little bit more about the darkness.
Spend these 30 hours getting freaky.
So Heather's, I mean, this is a dark comedy for sure. It's, you know, I think we tread around the idea of bootlegs in most things, but the bootleg is a big part of the existence of this. And
yeah.
you watch bits and pieces of that, and it is, you know, if you just had the audience reaction to it, you'd be like, what a fantastical farce I'm watching right now, you know?
Totally.
Like, how hilarious is this? But like, people get hurt in this show in really serious and real ways. And maybe the only separation you have is that every once in a while we burst out into song. But this is, you know, I think this one very much leans on both the dark and the comedy halves of dark comedy.
Exactly, because the comedy, I mean, the comedy is laced all the way through. Even in some of the sadder songs, they'll still have that line that, is that kind of like, ha-ha,
like, should I be laughing?
Yeah, exactly. So you never really get away from one or the other, because even, you know, if you're not out and out murdering someone, the kind of bullying element and the manipulation element there somewhere.
You just stop right at the bullying element. Like, I've been in high school forever now in my life, whether I was in it as a human being or, like,
trying
as a teacher.
Really, really hard at your SATs.
Trying so
not
hard. Like,
it.
Going on year 15, one of these days I'll graduate. But the bullying portrayed.
Steve Holt. Sorry.
the bullying portrayed in this musical is very real. It's one of, I would say, it's one of the most realistic. It's maybe the second most realistic bullying I've seen in a musical. The first is in Is There Life After High School, which gets really deep and dark.
Right. And I think that's a really important thing to note is a lot of these high school musicals, and we can include the High School Musical.
The titular.
Yeah. That was the word I was looking for. In that, they sugarcoat this bullying and they make it like cutesy and light. Yeah. And they never really get into the meat of it and understand that kids are, like, the cruelest people ever, and have that potential to just go right into the the teeth of it and the meat of it. And Heather's very much does that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? From, like, the third word, you've got, like, homo, freak, slut, short bus, burnout.
Yeah.
Lard ass.
Like, these are hard, hurtful words. And I mean, not, you know, language changes very quickly at the high school level, but even on the best of days, I hear this sort of stuff in the hallways at every school I've ever been a part of. And like that kind of portrayal and that kind of setup, you know, it's definitely coded in this. It's not sugar-coated, it's like satire coded, like you feel like from the outside, oh, this is so elevated and so ridiculous that it can't possibly be real. And so then the moments where you relate to it, the moments you see it as being very real, are, you know, they're gobsmacking, they're stunning, like they you know, grind you to a halt in your tracks, because of how very, very real some of the awful parts of high school life that are in this.
How very it's really, I think it's a good thing. Do you know what I mean? Because it's that kind of thing. It's like, and you get that a lot in teaching where you worry about, you know, you worry about exposing children to things and you worry about, they shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't be thinking about this. They shouldn't be knowing about this, blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, all kids want to do is hear the things that they're hearing. Do you know what I mean? They're experiencing it, so why not teach them about what they're experiencing?
Like, it's a part of their life, and figuring, you know, trying to give them the tools to deal with this. I mean, it's an interesting, I think, especially from an educational standpoint, it's an interesting balance to tread. So, like, this, mm-hmm. you know, this musical is very much based on a 1988 movie, so this is nothing new.
Yeah.
But you look at the contemporary trend of something like Dear Evan Hansen, or even, what is that awful series, 13 Ways? 13 Reasons Why, that's what it's called.
That's
13
it.
Million Reasons Why? Something like that.
Yeah.
They're perennial topics, they're evergreen topics, but it's definitely something that seems to be coming to a head in contemporary society.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you see this, Jimmy, but it is all over the rhetoric in the American education land. Like, teen depression and teen suicide is skyrocketing right now in a terrifying and awful way. And of course, like all of these hyper contemporary trends, no one knows quite why. But all the reasons are circling around, like, our socio-political sphere is not so great right now.
Yeah.
Our economic sphere is unpromising. You know, the, like, unemployment is giving all sorts of kids trepidations and, like, everything from college debt. And, like, these kids are being raised in a place where very explicitly their future is very uncertain.
Yeah.
And then combine that with the, you know, teenage brain's inability to have, like, a full idea of what's going on. And, of course, these things go up. And, of course, these things happen. And I do think, you know, it feels really dirty, but I think that's one of the reasons why these sorts of shows, like Dear Evan Hansen, Heathers, and 13 Reasons are seeing kind of a renaissance right now, is because kids relate to them on a very visceral level.
Well, I think it goes all the way back to Spring Awakening. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? We've talked about this before, and we've tried to work out what happened, how what we call the Broadway.com generation exploded. And we kind of pin it down to around the Spring Awakening time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it, and one of the main things that all of these shows that we've just listed, all of these shows that, you know, the kids and the teens are really obsessing over it, and not necessarily in a like faddy way, in a this pours into their heart way, and it's because they deal with these extremely real teenage issues in an extremely real and frank way. You know, there's no pussyfooting around it. You know, something like Spring, where you've got the suicide of Moritz, this kind of sexual confusion that lies there between, you know, Vendla and Melky. And then here in Heathers, we have really similar themes.
Yeah. And, like, how interesting to see. And, like, I can't pull the date of Spring Awakening off my mind, but at least a couple centuries ago to now, 2014, 2017. It's like we're seeing the same issues.
Exactly.
And rear their ugly head, but it feels more extreme nowadays.
Oh, definitely, of course it does. And one of the main reasons why is because kids, I don't want to sound like one of these crappy adults who are like, kids today, but in the sense that kids today are extremely smart, and they're much smarter than we ever were.
It goes to the technological revolution, like in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, if you wanted to paint that sugar-coated world for a kid, you absolutely could.
Yeah.
Like, if you were a teacher and you were like, it's going to be all right, it's going to be fine, even if that's not entirely true in the back of your mind, they can't go home and type into Google, is it actually going to be fine?
Right,
whereas,
exactly.
Like, nowadays, you know, it breaks my heart, but I had a kid the other day who was like, he walked into class and he was like, Mister, have you seen this? And he held up his phone, and it was one of those awful Facebook Live videos of some guy on the street shooting someone else.
Right, exactly.
And, like, that was a thing he was just casually watching during the passing period between classes.
Yeah.
It's terrifying to me.
It is.
You know, we can't, and not that we feel a duty to, like, protect these kids from these sorts of things, but they are very real things in our world.
Yeah.
And, you know, It's an awful balance to try and have to strike.
I know, but I think it's not even just a case of, oh, let's hide them away from it. It's let's educate them about it and let them understand what's going on. Because I think that's it, is nobody then wants to address these things.
Right.
You know? For like, to take the example of teen suicide, particularly in our community, in our LGBT community, mm-hmm. I mean, it's an issue wherever we go, but it's a serious issue.
Yeah.
For us. And it's, you know, like, there are organizations and you have things like the It Gets Better Project, and the Trevor Project out there to really support these teens, but it's not happening in the classroom.
Right.
These teens are having to go out and try and find this. Yeah. And a lot of the time it won't be accessible to them. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, you know, teens who are now maybe like 14, 15, might not even know what the It Gets Better Project was, because right. it's kind of fizzled out. Because in some yeah. ways, what, we fixed the problem? Absolutely yeah. not. We absolutely right. didn't. We need that constant reminder there.
Yeah. And because, I mean,
yeah.
all this to say, and to bringing it back to Heather's, I think this is the struggle with this kind of show. You know, all of the medical associations in America, at least, say that there are very serious repercussions to showing maybe suicidal teens' portrayal of teen suicide. Like, yeah. that can have a huge domino effect, and that's why you'll see suicide outbreaks and suicide epidemics yeah. in particular communities, because these things have a huge knock-on effect. But Heather's, this story, this show, seems to have a very honest yet still hopeful kind of retelling of this moral. You know, Veronica survives. Veronica yeah. makes it out the other end, and that's, you know, hashtag that's good. Like, uh-huh. It's like, it's worth it to continue on. And certainly, you know, most of the suicides in the show aren't actually suicides, they're murders, yeah,
exactly.
Which complicates things doubly.
Yeah. And I think it is important to note, in this show, no one actually successfully commits suicide.
Right. Yeah.
And that is important to know, because if they did, the show just couldn't go on.
Yeah.
Because it would need to be about that, and you would need to address that. Whereas what it's about is this is getting to that stage, that really extreme stage.
Yeah. And that seems to be some of the problem. I haven't watched 13 Reasons Why, but that seems to be, at least in the faculty meetings we have about it, some yeah. of the things that come out with it about, like, that make it more problematic, is that it glorifies these suicides maybe a little bit.
Mm.
But in something like Heather's, it's not about, you know, suicide's not the answer, because of course you have more life to live, and, like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The world.
And it's even in this kind of dark world, it does have that It Gets Better message.
Yeah.
And Veronica is there for everyone. Do you know what yeah. I mean? In the end. So, yeah, I guess, although I was saying nobody commits suicide, I guess, minor spoiler alert, but listen to the show. I guess JD does in many ways.
I guess JD does. And it's interesting. Like, this is one of the fascinating things to me. You know, I live my whole life in studying the structure of musical theater, and, like, yep. what is the question with any story you tell is, like, why today? Why is this the moment in this fictional world you've created that is the story you need to tell? Mm-hmm. You know, because for Veronica has existed forever and JD has existed forever. And yep. like, why are these the days you're going to put on stage of their life? Yep. And JD, you know, it's the archetypal stranger comes to town kind of story. This story has more in common with a story like The Music Man than you'd ever think. Because it, you know, so someone shows up and causes the change in the town, and everything dominoes from there.
Yep.
But JD, despite being the villain as explicitly as you can get, you know, he's messed up for his own external reasons.
Yep.
And, like, the way the show portrays that, that's important too, especially with him being the one successfully removing himself from the world and deciding that, mm-hmm. like, the world does not need me anymore, because he you know, he kind of reaches that conclusion that he's the broken part of the world.
Yep.
Which, you know, that's sad too, because no one is the broken part of the world. Like, there's always, you know, Veronica says it at the beginning of Act Two, the reprise of They Were Just 17. Like, when the players are shot, like, everyone, you know, high school is the beginning of your life. Everyone has a future. Everyone changes. Everyone gets better. And to, like, for those struggles to be so insurmountable that the only solution you have is to remove yourself from this world.
Yeah.
Like, every time I go through it, it legitimately makes me deeply, deeply sad and distraught.
I remember the first time I saw the film. And I'm a huge fan. I am one of the Heather's cult people. It really shook me. It really shook me because it was so frank and it was so shocking. And I think having seen Mean Girls first, because you can't escape the similarities between the two.
Right. Yeah. Like, this is, you know, definitely Mean Girls is Diet trope. Heathers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's Diet Heathers. I think I was expecting a Mean Girls. I was expecting, you know, just 80s Mean Girls, something more like Clueless, right? Yeah,
exactly.
And then what I got was completely different. And it really shook me up. Yeah. Because it's interesting, because with the character of JD, it's a really tough one, because you shouldn't ever laud what he does. You shouldn't ever be like, it's okay what he did, the committing murder thing. It's just because, you know, he's troubled. Like, murder is very bad. And, you know, the kind of journey that Veronica goes on where she allows that to happen is a flawed thing, is majorly flawed.
What's her very hilarious line that's like, my teenage bullshit has a body count or something
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's strange, I think, though, with characters like that, because when I was younger and a bit more dark-sided, and, you know, I would have been the, like, Jack Kerouac beat generation if I was there, that kind of thing, and if I didn't have kind of musical theater to keep me happy. but you kind of get attracted to these characters. And I always kind of think about... do you watch American Horror Story?
I've seen bits and pieces, yeah.
So there's a character in that in the first season called Tate Langdon. And he is extremely troubled. You know, he goes into school with a gun. Like, there's lots of, you know, really, really dark things. But one of the things that I don't know if this troubles me or I'm just a bit like, okay, I kind of get it. I don't know where I am yet on it. Is looking at kids' reactions to these characters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These dark warning characters. Do you know what I mean? They're moralistic warning characters.
Well, and it's,
they're like falling in love with them.
Right.
And it's that, you know, it's the they get the Edward Cullen treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really, I really struggle with this kind of show, and we might talk about it in a second with the idea of Heather's 101 and the school adaptation. But so this movie came out in 1988, you know, 1988, before high schools in America had lockdown drills. You know, Columbine was in 1999.
Yep.
Virginia Tech was in 2007. And certainly this movie latched onto something that was very real and very much in the zeitgeist of, like, American teen life. And, you know, there are a million other examples too, which is the saddest thing in the world. But to see it in this kind of, you know, not quite glorified, but you, in the same, Sweeney Todd is an apt comparison, because at the end of Act One in Sweeney Todd, you're like, okay, I understand you. Your life has been awful, and I appreciate where you're coming from. And in the same way with Heather's at the end of Act One, during Our Love is God, maybe not as explicitly, but you're like, oh, huh, yeah, they've been fucked over. Like, man, life for a high schooler is tough. But that does, you can't blow up a gym because of it, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
Like,
you go on that same kind of mental journey that Veronica goes on herself, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's why it's so successful, that's why it's so popular, is because it really challenges your conceptions with this, exactly. And, like, hides it under the laughter of fart jokes and sex jokes.
No fart jokes. There are no fart jokes.
There are no fart jokes. There are vomit jokes.
I'm okay with vomit. Well... Not in I Hear This, but it's so explicit. But it happens once, and that's fine. It's part of the story.
It happens all the way. She dies, and she's, like, vomiting up corn nuts for the rest of the show.
It's drain cleaner, but it's fine. By the way, sorry, just to get this clear, what are corn nuts?
Oh, God, I don't know. I think I would not know where to find corn nuts at a local 7-Eleven.
Because I know how much you guys love corn.
We just have a lot of corn. I don't particularly love corn. It sounds like a snack food. I'm sure they chose it because corn nuts is funny to say in the same way that pickle is funny to say.
I love pickles. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, we were almost at a segue and then I ruined it. But let's have a little chat about... why this show is so successful.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
I'd trade my life for yours. We'll make them disappear. We'll plant our garden here. Our love is God. Our love is God. Our love is God. Our love is God. Our love is God.
Our love is God.
Our love is God.
So, I mean, there's no getting away from it. This show is huge.
Yeah. And I think for as much as we talk about, you know, our patented copyright Jim and Tomic heavy topics,
yeah,
this show is well constructed. It is good. Like, if you look at it from an analytical musical theater standpoint, it is a rock solid show.
Yeah, completely. Completely. It's, you know, it does everything it needs to do really, really well.
Yeah.
And has a really exciting score to go along with it.
Yeah. I mean, can I even talk about, like, the musical theater structure of the reprise? Like, you're going to bring back a song again so that the audience remembers it. And this show does it very overtly with the song Dead Girl Walking.
Yeah.
Which we see in the first act, the concept is Dead Girl Walking almost as a metaphor. Like, Veronica is going to go back to school the next day and her life is going to be ruined by the Heathers because, you know, she's fallen out of that social critique. But then act two, she fake commits suicide and then goes back to the school to, like, save it from everything, a school which assumes she's dead, and so she becomes the dead girl walking. Like, to repurpose a song in your reprise to give it a new meaning, that's perfect, and it's so multi-leveled. Like, that's how you
gypsy,
use a
like
reprise.
Gypsy, that's gypsy quality.
Yeah.
You know, let me entertain you. Like, that is some masterful, smart stuff.
Yeah.
That Lawrence O'Keefe is extremely good at.
Yes.
Briefly, let's chat about Lawrence O'Keefe. Well, no, we can just say he's great.
He's great. I mean, I would say Legally Blonde has certainly seen maybe larger life than Heathers, but I think Heathers is the best.
Heathers will be his thing that, you know, I think everyone will remember him for.
It's the most artful thing. It feels like the most artistic thing in its execution. You know, Legally Blonde is a good direct adaptation of a movie. Bat Boy is bizarre, but well done. But yeah. like Heathers takes the source material, turns it into something that is both, you know, very directly honoring the original source material while also bringing a whole new layer of, you know, nuance and intricacy to it.
Yep. For sure. And to be honest, I think he did that with Legally Blonde as well. Like, he's just good at adapting movies. You know what I mean? That is a gift that he has. And long may it continue. Like,
yeah.
Gosh, if I was adapting a movie, I would hand it to him. I would just be like, do it for me, please.
Yep.
Do it really well.
Yep.
So, one of the, I think the main thing, we talked about it in our quiz question. One of the things that we really need to honor O'Keefe and Murphy for here is how they honor schools.
Yeah.
They get this. And this is one thing that I really think is fabulous. You know, a lot of your writers that are writing for Broadway slap so many restrictions and make you have to jump through all of these hoops to perform their shows.
You just look at Les Mis School Edition, which like...
Right.
Les Mis School Edition, I don't know if you know this, Jimmy, doesn't have the confrontation in it.
I've been in Les Mis School Edition, so yeah.
Like, and
there's so much missing.
There's like parts of the plot missing.
Well, and, some, you know, something like Into the Woods School Edition.
Well, Into the Woods whole Junior. So I don't know if this is the same way in the UK, but there are two distinct separations I see in America. There are school editions and junior versions, and they're marketed towards different age demographics. School editions are generally high school marketed, and you find them from all sorts of different licensing companies. So they might take out some vulgarity, they might rewrite some songs, they might like change the keys for a couple things. Yep. And then there are junior editions, which are more marketed towards the elementary middle school market.
Okay.
And so those are dumbed down in a very different way.
Okay.
They're like they're created in such a way so that you can take the title of a recognizable thing and perform it with middle schoolers in a believable way. And so is something like Into the Woods Junior or the barbaric Madagascar Junior. Don't get me started.
I mean, most things have a junior now, like Lion King's got junior.
Lion King, Aladdin Junior. But so this is the thing. Lion King has a junior edition, but not a school edition, because Disney does not want high schoolers trying to replicate the Broadway production.
Okay.
They're like trying to drive a wall between those two things. And so this is to say Heathers has a school edition, but not a junior edition. And like, school editions feel like they're like, what is the bare minimum number of changes we can do to make this appropriate for high schoolers? Mm-hmm. Where junior editions are like, what are the couple things we need to include to make this still seem like the original musical when middle schoolers perform it?
Right. Okay.
And so it's a different ideology, I feel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what these guys are doing is kind of what no one has really done for a school edition so far.
Yes.
Certainly, I mean, obviously, I can only talk about school editions that I've done and the experiences that I've had from there. But what O'Keefe and Murphy have done is they've really sat down and thought about how can we make a really important and valid show. They're not thinking, oh, we have to do this so we can make a bit more money. Let's cut that one here.
It's where they're
really
even
crappy lyrics. Like,
I would put them higher on the ladder there than even like Steve Sondheim himself.
I would too. No, completely. We talked about this before in Sweeney. Like, I don't think Steve Sondheim really cares that much about high schoolers doing his shows.
No, like in some extents he does, but like in the rewrites, it's like, fine, if you're really offended by this, let me write something that's, you know, so Rubber Baby Buggy Bumper is that, like, no one will ever be offended by it.
Exactly. Fame, you know, can't keep it cool. Avenue Q.
Yeah, my social life is online.
In fact, I think Avenue Q is a really important one to talk about here, because Avenue Q, in their school edition, I mean, first of all, Should there be an Avenue Q School Edition? I guess so.
But this is, I think, the discussion to have. Because right. Avenue Q is a show where its shtick is vulgarity. Yes. Like, explicitly so. Kate Monster drops the F-bomb in the first song so that you know this ain't your old Sesame Street.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The puppets swear in the show, and they have sex, and they have boobs, and they have problems.
Right. Whereas, Avenue Q isn't Avenue Q without that.
Right, exactly. It's just Sesame Street at that
exactly.
point. Exactly. Whereas, like, Heather's is an honest discussion of high school life.
Yeah.
And so finding the adaptation where you can do 80% of it, and then, like, the 20% is to appease the church lady moms who can't get by some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
That becomes important. Whereas,
absolutely.
Like, I don't think Avenue Q, the school edition, spurs the same kind of social discussion that Heather's 101 does when
exactly.
performed by a high school group.
Avenue Q school edition is there so that high schools can do it and Avenue Q's producers can make a bit more money.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they want to do it because they think, oh, it's Avenue Q. They get it and they're like, this isn't Avenue Q.
Right. It's a different
you know?
Show. Yeah.
Exactly. And, O'Keefe and Murphy, they've talked a lot about this, which I think is really good, actually. And it might just be publicity. I don't really mind, because I really agree with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, so with Heather's 101, which is what they're calling their school edition,
mm-hmm.
They've said a lot that this show almost should be performed by high schoolers.
Yeah.
Because when they've seen it performed by high schools, when they've been workshopping... Mm-hmm. Some of the new content, they said it's more moving, mm-hmm. it's more real, it's more scary,
yeah.
Because instead of, you know, a 20-something year old who's young and believable in the role,
right.
you know, talking about suicide and their pains and things like that, it's not real because they've kind of moved on from those pains and they understand that that's in the past. It's a reflection.
Right.
Whereas when a high schooler who's, you know, peers are having these exact same feelings,
mm-hmm.
are talking about these things, that is really chilling and
yeah.
that is really important.
Yeah.
And these guys totally get it. They're
yeah.
not coming in to like, oh, we'll just cut that, we'll rinse that out. They
right.
are honoring, you know, and I think, again, so this is a really good point to make, and you said it earlier, is to appease the nuns and to appease the...
Yep.
you know, snooty mothers. It's not to appease the teenagers. They know all this shit.
They know
on,
all this stuff. Exactly.
Right?
I mean,
the reason they love Heathers is because they've listened to the original Gaz
yeah,
Gordon
exactly.
Heathers.
Like, we're not pretending that they haven't heard the swear words they're supposed to be singing.
Right.
It's like, we talked about, it's the Merrily We Roll Along conundrum. Like, teenagers don't have access to that life experience for a lot of the shows we put them in about yeah. 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 40-somethings later in their life. And it's still fine. Like, that's the joy of being a high school performer is you
right,
get to
exactly.
pretend what it's like to be an adult. When you do, you can't take it with you or our town or, you know,
yeah.
all these sorts of things. But then to have teenagers playing teenagers on stage, there is something like... It's real. It's just real because they know
it's
it.
It's real. And
yeah.
I just think it must be very almost therapeutic, I can imagine, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. you get to work through all these thoughts. I mean, theater is therapy. Any adult roles I've played or even directed, you get to go through it and you get to kind of work through these emotions in a safe space.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And come out the other side and reflect on it. It's not directly happened to you, but you've
right.
been able to work through it.
Yeah.
To have those opportunities as a teenager, to be able to have those discussions in a frank manner, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really fantastic.
Well, and then you're, you know, as with any theater piece, you're bringing it to a community. Like, it doesn't exist just in the rehearsal hall. You then show it to everyone.
Totally.
Which is why, you know, every time a North Shore, Illinois school performs The Music Man about feeling weird about an outsider coming into town, I always
right.
think, like, have you really thought this through? Do you really, like, you know, not that I'm asking you to be really, really intense about thinking about the inner machinations of the Music Man, but like,
yeah,
your community is pretty closed off. Do you realize that, like, you are Iowa stubborn? And yeah, so then,
right,
to see that sort of thing in Heather's, we're like, we're not pretending. This is not a metaphor. They're in a high school. Like, this is one-to-one realness. That's powerful. That's important.
Totally. Totally. Want to talk just a little bit about what we talked about in the quiz question. So, obviously, we're saying that they've rewritten one of their songs,
mm-hmm.
And they actually like this new song a lot better. So the song they've rewritten is Blue,
uh-huh.
And we'll talk about what that's about in a second. And they've replaced it with a song called You're Welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So this happens in the show at a point where Heather's been brought out by, Veronica's been brought out by Heather Duke,
who knows?
Yeah.
Red and yellow, no, green and yellow Heather.
Yes, exactly. Red Heather's dead now. And the two jock characters, Curtin mm-hmm. and Ram, are... They've been fooling around in the mm-hmm. film. They're tipping cows. Mm-hmm. I was sad they didn't bring the cow tipping into.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. It's
but
a very,
that's okay. We'll
it's a
allow
very Midwest
it.
Thing. Yeah, they're drunk. They're horny. And doesn't Veronica have a line where it's like, wait, you were about to be date raped, and so the way you were going to get out of the date rape was by calling me to be a stand-in for your date rape.
Exactly. That is exactly how it happens. And, you know, the guys are like, hey, it's fine. It's just, it's this classic conversation that we all know and love. That, you know, that this is a real, real thing. This is happening.
It's a very
24/7. It's constant.
Yeah.
Consent and all of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Blue is about blue balls.
Yep. They subscribe to the Dance 10 Looks 3 school of titling your song.
Absolutely, they do.
You don't give away your punchline in your title.
Yes. And the blue balls is symptomatic of let me get this right. Hang on. Epididymal hypertension.
Thank you for your clinical accuracy.
Thank you. Science degree, right? that's all I talked about. And so they've replaced it with a song called You're Welcome, which is basically where the guys are coming at Veronica being like, hey, you should feel really grateful for the fact that we're coming on to you because that means you're hot.
Yeah.
And how many times have we heard that story?
So I will say, I've listened to You're Welcome. I do think, technically, from like a musical theater analytical standpoint, I do enjoy Blue more.
Yeah.
I think it has better wordplay. You know, I enjoy some of the rhymes more. But that is secondary. Because... a song where the chorus is "You make my balls so blue" is not a song that you can ask teenagers to perform for their parents. Like, you just can't. No one will feel comfortable during this in a heightened way. Like, this song creates an uncomfortableness from any audience performer standpoint, but the thing O'Keefe and Murphy understand is, like, in a high school context, there's an elevated layer there, is your audience knows the actors. And so there's a little more tact and separation and understanding needed there. Not to mention, we're looking at date rape with some pretty rosy, haha, comical glasses in this kind of song. Like, in a way that makes it very real through the satire, but like, ha, 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 oh man, yep, we're gonna have sex with you and you're gonna like it. Like, no, not okay. But so it's a great replacement. I love it in its conceit.
It really
is.
The thing is like, what I like about it is they've not just said, okay, we'll do it like, you make my heart so blue every time you leave me.
It's not
like that.
It's not Grease School Edition, where what is it, Sandra D, which is a song about some really deep, like maybe getting accidentally pregnant and like not fitting in high school. But there's a School Edition where that subplot is totally wiped from the book.
Yeah,
and so completely. Rizzo just sings this song out of nowhere.
And Fame, you know, Can't Keep It Down about unwanted erections.
Right.
It's turned into Can't Keep It Cool about getting annoyed and flustered.
Yeah. Like, or as we mentioned, the internet is for porn, turning into My Social Life is Online. Online.
Exactly.
Like it loses the grit without that underlying.
Absolutely. So what these guys have done is what every single writer should do, is wanting to do it at School Edition. Mm-hmm. They've written a new song that has just as much importance that you could just literally supplant into the production and it would still work. And, you know, like we said, they're considering doing it. So maybe that'll even happen. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I've been perusing just some of the other changes through Heather's 101, and they really seem to have done it with care.
Yeah.
You know, it's always like your first pass is how many swear words can we cut? How many drug references can we cut? This is some of the same, like the difference between Rent and Rent School Edition. Mm-hmm. I love in, what is the 7-Eleven song?
In Freeze Your Brain.
Freeze Your Brain. There's one reference where JD talks about, the slushies being his cocaine.
Uh-huh.
And in the School Edition, they changed that rhyme to it being his Novocaine, which is what an elegant particular solution. You've even kept the rhyme with Freeze Your Brain, Novocaine, or cocaine.
Exactly.
Then you've been able to remove a drug reference.
Before we had Novocaine, we used cocaine.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just science. It's just great. Science, guys.
I think there's a School Edition of Title of Show that comes really close to being as delicately structured and like very intentionally structured. But every School Edition should be like this.
Yeah.
You know, in a perfect world, we don't need School Editions. In our semi-unperfect world, we need 101 editions like Heather's.
Yeah, exactly. And all of this to say, O'Keefe and Murphy have realized that this is where this show is going to get its salt.
Yeah.
It never made it to Broadway, but that's really okay because it is loved by so many.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of these teens are wanting to do this show in their high school. And they've been so savvy to be like, okay, if this is how we're going to do it, we're going to do it right.
Yeah.
And because they've treated it well and because they've created a high quality edition, it means that it will do extremely well. So mad props to them.
No, it's just one. It's really inspiring, honestly.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It is. And it is. I hope other writers consider how important it is.
Yeah. Cause it's like, it's certainly, even from an academic perspective, just an interesting challenge to like have to write a musical that would be appropriate for high school. And, you know, you're dealing with so many variables. Like, we got in trouble in high school for doing The Pajama Game because it has some discussions of like going to a bar and being drunk, which I think.
Are you serious?
Yep. And like, they're the most naff, unimportant, like ridiculous portrayals of drunkenness ever. And we still got in trouble for it. So you never know. But then, like, you have something like Spelling Bee, where the school replacement is, instead of My Unfortunate Erection, My Unfortunate Distraction, where there's no one in the audience who's not supplanting erection for distraction every time it's sung. And so what, you know, where do you strike your balance? Where do you find your place where you think you're going to be, you know, financially viable, like still have schools that perform this and like meet that conservative Christian majority? You know, it's the same thing we talked about in like Hello Dolly, where, you know, you put a black cast in front of a white audience. Like you're tricking these audiences into seeing something they might not have seen otherwise. By crafting it in a really particular way.
Exactly. Exactly. So well done, man.
Good for you.
Well done.
Hugging my knees, and the captain is pointing. Well, who made her captain? Still, the weakest must go. The tiniest lifeboat.
Now, as well as having a great life in high school, the reason it has a great life in high school is because of its huge, I hope that was big enough, huge life on the internet.
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm typing Heather's musical into YouTube right now. And maybe beyond the playlist and the ads they show me for the movie, the first thing, you know, we tread lightly around the concept of bootlegs during this podcast, but we're going to go full in right now. Number three result, Heather's the Musical full show 2017, full on bootleg, almost a million views, posted 2 months ago. And this has happened for a while now.
Yeah, this is like since it was off Broadway.
Yeah.
It has been happening. And I kind of, straight off the bat, I am interested to know what O'Keefe and Murphy think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because, and now we have talked about bootlegs before, so we won't open up that can of worms again. But one of the things that we talked about was, okay, if a show is closed,
right.
And this was a lot of people's opinion as well when we had the discussion, was, okay, if a show is closed, you're never going to see that again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's finished. So is it okay then to watch the bootleg? And there's reasons for both sides. I feel for something like Heather's, no one on that staff would be like, no, we want rid of this bootleg. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Because they're not sitting on an alternative that's later going to, you know, make them any kind of financial profit, which would be, I think, the one appropriate consideration to have.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about these sort like copyright and intellectual property is always a tricky subject. And can someone experience the thing you've created outside of the context through which you want it to be experienced? Mm-hmm. You know, default answer is no, but I don't know a better experience interested parties would have other than a bootleg on YouTube nowadays. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, people, you know, these are people who would gladly go buy a ticket to go see it somewhere if they could, and they can't. And so, you know, might as well experience the art and the content and the idea and the moral somehow.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, and it's interesting because, you know, when we talked about it with Hamilton, I was like, there's no way that people would watch the bootleg and then fork out all of this money to go for a ticket.
Right.
I think because these kids, and not even just kids, like everyone who watches it loves it, love this show so much that they probably would move hell or high water to see it in person, and again and again and again see it. Another stat to throw out there. So the cast recording, and I'm not even sure if this is official or not. I think it might be partially official. because
it's
been there for a long time. The whole thing is on YouTube. The whole cast recording is on YouTube with all the lyrics. And they're currently approaching 20 million views across the whole thing.
That's crazy huge.
This is a musical theater show that was off Broadway.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's close to some pop song YouTube videos. Like,
exactly. Yeah, this isn't Heather's musical
Vivo.
Number.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's just fascinating, I think.
Yeah.
And so you have to wonder, like, what is it about it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, I do.
Why
I do
Heather's?
I think part of it is, and, you know, who knows why, what's the cause of this, but it has struck that like Goldilocks zone of popularity. Mm-hmm. it hasn't gone past it in a Hamilton or Cats or Phantom kind of way, where like it's, or you know, Wicked or whatever, where it becomes so popular that it's uncool to like it. Like, you know, there are people I know who would never listen to musical theater in their life who know what Wicked and Hamilton are about.
Yep.
You know, maybe have heard a couple songs because it's entered that pop culture. Whereas, like, you have to search for Heathers. You have to, like, go out and listen to Heathers. Heathers isn't going to encounter you on the radio. And so that makes it feel more legitimate somehow.
It's more your thing. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
Be your thing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And be like, look at this cool musical that I love, Heathers. Not a lot of people have heard about it. And like, spoiler alert, a lot of people have heard about it.
Yeah.
But you still get to feel that way in an honest, legitimate fashion. Whereas, like, you know, the video I posted a couple weeks ago where it's like 10 songs from musicals you've never heard of, and I get comments that are like, have you heard about the musical You're in Town? Not many people have heard about it. And like, yeah, plenty of people have heard about You're in Town. It won best musical. Like, calm down a little bit. But like, Heathers, not many people have heard about it, even though a bunch of people have heard about it.
Yeah, but so the thing is like, those people are online. Do you know what I mean? It's this internet community that has heard about it and loves it. And this is what I found fascinating. So I had a fun little adventure delving into their community and seeing.
Do they have a demonym? Do they have a name for all of themselves?
By the way, I've yet to find one. I can only assume they just call themselves the Heathers.
That's a good name. That's better than like,
right?
You know, Newsies
the Heatherettes.
Trash. The Heatherettes.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being Newsies trash, Thomas.
I mean, I don't want...
And anyway, we call ourselves Fansies, so...
My apologies for getting the names wrong.
Thank you. But, right, so I had a great, great time. So I kind of scoured a couple places. It has a huge, huge existence on YouTube. It seems like YouTube is probably its biggest social media land. More so than Tumblr. Normally, Tumblr is where the fandom
Normally, Tumblr is where the fandom lives, yeah.
Absolutely, but it seems like YouTube seems a base, and that kind of makes sense because it's the origin. The bootleg was on YouTube, and that's where everyone has their first experience with Heathers. One of the things that have come out from it are these things called animatics.
What a weird... As someone who makes musical theater YouTube videos, I find this so strange.
Yeah, but then I guess it's like, you know, when we were teens, it was just, I guess, like slash fiction.
Yeah.
Do you know, I bring slash up because we're gay men and, you know,
but
hey.
But it's totally a thing.
I dabbled. I'm not going to lie.
There's a whole bunch of people now who have, like, made it their mission to find your slash fiction still existing on your Zanga somewhere.
Good luck. I'm saying nothing. I had different pseudonyms back then, guys.
Hendrix.livejournal.com or whatever.
Doesn't exist. There is a live journal, though. Good luck and Godspeed. But, yeah, so these animatics are fantastic. I had no idea these were a thing until I found them in Heathers. So what they are, for people who don't know, is basically fantastic artists basically draw the songs.
For me, what it really feels like is a stand-in for a music video. Is like, if this, you know, and we see this for the popular Broadway shows, at least now, I feel like, especially in 2017, really specifically in 2017, the Broadway spread has finally gotten savvy about internet video. And especially internet music video. Like, there was just a teaser, quote-unquote, music video of a Patti LuPone song from Warpaint.
Right.
And it's just her in the studio, and it's not even the whole song. But they've finally figured out that, like, this is a place people will go to look for these things.
Yeah.
And, like, relive it in this new, slightly different context as a way of reliving the whole experience outside the musical.
Absolutely.
And that's...
Like, yeah, I mean...
That's what these animatic things are. They're like a Band-Aid solution to that.
It's fan fiction. Do you know what I mean? It's just an extension of fan fiction. You're creating your own fiction from this thing that's real.
Yeah.
And I love it. And so, kind of extended reading as well. a lot of the times Heathers is one of the shows that people will say, hey, I'm just getting into musical theatre, I've listened to Book of Mormon, Les Mis, Phantom, Heathers, Rent. Mm-hmm. Actually, not even Rent. I'm going to take Rent back. We'll just take those four. And Heathers is there. And I'm like, this is so interesting.
Yeah.
This is something that you've been able to find. And it's never even, you know what I mean? It's been in these small theatres in New York. And it's not existed out there. And a lot of things you talk about, like, oh, yeah, I love Heathers. I found this great animatic of it. And it just made me fall in love with it. And I was like, this is so interesting. Yeah. Because, I mean, I think Hamilton definitely had a huge explosion. But I think Hamilton also kind of came from a very intellectual perspective. Mm. Like, people were very academic about Hamilton.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And obviously, you know, there are Hamiltrash out there who will meme the heck out of that show, and good on you.
And they're like, there are 6 syllables in this line and 14 syllables in that line, and they're and that makes a prime number, and my brain explodes. Yeah,
exactly. We'll all remember your reactionary Tumblr post, Tommy, that still is out there. But basically, with the Heathers, it seems like it's kind of exclusively this. You know, Heather's trash. And it sounds like I'm trashing them. No, that's just what we call fandoms. Like, this fandom is very passionate and very besotted and exists completely online.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say of the, like, we talk fandoms a lot because we live in this fandom world. Of the fandoms that I see, I think Heather's feels like the most appropriately passionate. Might be fighting words. But like, it's weird to me how many people know the different names of all the cats and cats. Or like, you know, they talk about what, like, carrot, the guy who carries the carrots around in one scene in the movie version of Les Mis, and it's like, there's memes about Carrot Man out there. Like, that's ridiculous. We've gone too far. Like, no one ever thought that
you're
hard
really,
about,
like, going in with the fine tooth comb to be like, who's not talked about this piece of gravel? I'll do it. The gravel.
Exactly.
But and then
Heathers feels like this analysis is appropriate, and this joy and passion and, you know, like, appreciation of it is equal to the work that went into it, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. I just feel it's like there's just, it's just a complete passion project across the board. Do you know what I mean? Because actually, do you know what? The first time I listened to it, the first time I watched it, yes, I watched a bit like, sue me. Don't sue me.
I mean, so have a million other people if they wanted to.
Exactly.
It feel at this point, this, I mean, maybe this is a sidetrack and I'll let you get to your point in a second, but it feels like with bootlegs, you know, the producing teams, author teams are always doing that balance of advertising versus lost revenue. And it feels like the Heathers team have very squarely decided that these bootlegs of their production work towards their favor.
Yeah, 100%. So when I watched it, I was a little bit angry because of how different it was from the film. Mm-hmm. So I've already said that, like, I'm, you know, Heather's film trash. I don't know what we call ourselves. but, like, you know, I'm one of these people that will throw out all the quotes all the time. Yeah. And, you know, it's, to me, it's so quick and amazing. And, you know, like Clueless as well, it's just one of these films that I go to and I'm always in love with it. And so the musical is very different in many ways, and particularly if you look at Veronica. So, for example, Veronica in the film is a Heather to start with. She's right in that clique already. She has a little bit more, you know, the tension is still there that gets developed in the musical, and she still hates them. But and it's that line where she's like, it's more like the Heathers are people I work with and our job is being popular and shit. That feeling is still there. It's a direct quote from the film. But she never had this like geeky moment to start with. Martha Dumptruck is not her best friend in the film. She has a different best friend. She doesn't feature in the musical at all. And I get that. That's dramaturgy stuff, and that's okay.
Right.
But it was just all these little things. JD, very, very different.
Yeah.
You know, a bit more sympathetic in the musical. And I was a bit like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah.
And so I was just a bit like, this is different, this is new, and you know.
And you're not sure if you're okay with it.
And I wasn't sure but then what I realized, and it was the same kind of journey I went on with Legally Blonde,
mm-hmm.
weirdly, with O'Keefe, is I was like, it's his own thing. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
It is, it's completely its own thing. Yeah. And that's just fantastic. Like, it's really good. And once you kind of accept that, you can completely love it.
Yeah. It makes me wish there was... We were more okay with calling things inspired by as opposed to based on.
Yeah.
It really, I do, I mean, maybe this is a bit of a tangent or fodder for another podcast, but I think it has to do with America's obsession with intellectual property and, you know, original storytelling and things like that. And, like,
yeah.
we're really possessive of the things we wrote and making sure that, like, they're accurately represented elsewhere, or if they're not accurately represented, that, like, we've very specifically described how the inaccuracies exist.
Yeah.
And, like, if we were more fluid with, like, yeah, you know, this is kind of based on this. This is mostly inspired by that. It's the same way with Passion last week. Mm-hmm. Like, we're taking a lot of the story and the feeling and the sorts of things that we liked from the movie, and we're turning it into a musical. But it's a musical. It's totally different. People didn't sing in the movie. And so, of course, things are different. And so, you know, we don't feel possessive about that.
Exactly. And I think, like, well, because I now kind of watch them for different things. Like, I would now watch the film for the lines and for the script, because the script is flawed, one of my favorite scripts of any films ever. And the thing is as well, if you haven't watched the film and you're a really big fan of the musical, please do watch it. I found, again, in my internet journey, a lot of people were like, there's a movie?
Yeah.
And I was a bit like, what?
Yeah. There, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I experienced it in the other direction. I was musical first, then movie. And like,
right, okay.
you can tell, if you know to look for these things, the part from the musical that are the parts from the movie that people love, like, you know, Lick It Up or So Fuck Me Gently with a Chainsaw.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
These are the quotes. These are, you know, We're Gonna Need a Bigger Boat or, you know, Luke, I Am Your Father. Like, these are the quotes that go on the poster. And so it's great that they're included in the musical. But then so interesting to see the things that are different and, like, how you get that different feeling. And even just how a movie that was maybe, you know, a contemporaneous movie, a movie about the 80s set in 1988, and written in 1988 and produced in 1988, is different from the musical adaptation in the 2010s, but still very squarely set in the 80s, and how, you know, two decades of change have affected what follows through and what is exaggerated and what is a stereotype and, like, what has changed.
Totally.
It's cool. Like, these are, you know, these are the details we love. These are the things we love talking about.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that maybe I dislike, just to throw out a dislike into there, is the Heathers themselves.
Yeah.
They're a lot more evil in the musical than they are in the film. In the film, I guess that's actually a big part of the film, is that JD's murder bent is really unfounded.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really unfounded because... Yes, the Heathers are bullies. We all know that. We're all very aware, and they're you know, nasty people in that respect. But in the musical, you know, like the bit, for example, with Veronica's parents in the liverwurst, and Heather Chandler just drops the croquet ball into the pate. Like, in the movie, they're really nice to her parents, and they're you know, they treat them. You know, it's almost, again, it reminds me of Clueless, like the way that they treat adults. It's like, oh, we understand you got lots of money, so it's fine. We're really nice to you.
Yeah.
And they're respectful. Because at the end of the day, the Heathers are intelligent people. Do you know what I mean? They're not dumb blondes.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's not Mean Girls. And it's a big, big point. And I like that. But the dropping of the croquet ball, I was like, that's not right.
Yeah.
That's not right. And I wonder if they're doing it because they want you to... maybe not hate JD really quickly. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it feels like To draw a sideways comparison.
Yeah.
This, I think, is the interesting challenge of a movie-to-stage adaptation that we see with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory on Broadway right now. So let's talk Gene Wilder, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Because
I think that's the one people know, which is actually Willy Wonka, not Charlie
Willy
and
Wonka,
Chocolate Factory.
The Chocolate Factory, yep.
The moment you see Gene Wilder and he does that somersault is halfway through the movie. You have watched half of the movie by that time.
Yep.
If you have like a nostalgic post timeline of what the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie or what the Willy Wonka movie is in your mind, it doesn't feel like that. The parts that stand out as bigger are the parts in the factory, you know, from the chocolate river to the TV machine to, you know, the blueberry bit. Like, those are the parts that stand out to you. And there's parts that lead up to it, like the, you know, weird British teacher and all the scenes in the chocolate shop and Charlie's mother's song that gets cut in every TV broadcast they do of it. But these are things I know, right?
I
know.
I hate the US.
It gets cut all the time.
Not ours. Charlie.
Yeah, no, it gets cut for time on ABC Family every time. But like, these are because that's not what the parts that became the movie. And you'd never know these were the parts that became the movie when you made it, because that's how time works. It feels the same way with Heathers. And so then you flex and adapt your story to make it who it's about. I think Heathers the movie is not entirely, but much more about the Heathers than the musical is. In the musical Heathers, they're supporting characters. They're one-dimensional.
Very much so, yeah.
You know who they are from their entrance, and the rest is just confirmation. Whereas, like, in the movie, they develop that, and they're multifaceted. And JD is perhaps a little more one-dimensional, but you know he has a history, and so his dimension was created before the lights dimmed in the movie theater.
I
find this adaptation stuff fascinating, and it speaks to me of an intent and a carefulness about it that when it doesn't happen in a movie to stage adaptation, like, you know, this is why I hate Shrek the musical. This is why I don't particularly like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory the musical, because the contemporary Broadway version, you don't see Christian Borle as Willy Wonka until like right before Act Two, like right before intermission, because they're sticking really close to the movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if their goal is to make something that can tour and can be financially viable, they shouldn't. They should do something like Heathers, where her transformation takes one song. You know, we're like, we get this exposition out of the way and done, because you already know how it's going to happen.
Yeah, totally. If MD would like to know the rest of my thoughts on the adaptation and the things I like and the things I dislike, come on over to Reddit and ask me about them. I really talk. Got a lot to say about the adults.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm just going to drop that in there as a little point of mystique.
Okay. Interesting.
That is interesting. Blah, blah, blah. I will say, though, so many of you guys were like, oh my god, Heathers. Like, one of the only tweets we've ever had of someone being like, do this podcast has been about Heathers.
You know, so I will say Heathers, I think, is one of the shows where public opinion of it matches my opinion of it, because I am such a cynic of these things.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
Populist and,
Yeah, like, people love cats and I hate cats. People love Phantom of the Opera and I hate Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
but people love Hamilton and you love Hamilton.
I love Hamilton, but I think it's more problematic than some people say, which might not have come across in our very first podcast we did.
But we were so young back then.
Man, weren't we? But no, I think Heathers, I would be hard pressed to find something you could improve about Heathers.
Yeah.
You know?
The musical, the design.
Yeah, we like the stage, the scenic design.
Yeah, the direction in general, start to finish. We can chat.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's fine. That's not the musical. That isn't the musical. So yeah, completely. But no. So if y'all don't make your Reddit accounts and come on over and chat to us about this, I'll be really disappointed.
Right? I've been I've been on a comment replying kick.
You have. Tommy's back, everyone.
I'm back. I never left, but I'm back.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So you don't all have to put up with just me replying. But no, honestly, I do want to just talk about Reddit because it's getting really good. It's getting really nice out there. And we've been getting some lovely comments, some lovely feedback, and just interesting discussions.
This is, I mean, I've been thinking about this maybe more explicitly this week, too. Because my YouTube channel has seen a weird explosion in growth, and I'm struggling with that. But, like, I feel like there is this undercurrent of musical theater commentary that's not happening in the way it should. And, like, that's why we do this podcast. That's why we have our YouTube channels. That's why we like doing the things we do.
Totally.
But it's not just us. Everyone, you know, we wouldn't have people watching and enjoying and listening to these things if there weren't other people who liked talking about these things.
Exactly.
And there is an arts commentary that doesn't seem to have existed in the musical theater world, and it should. It absolutely should, in a populous, internet-y kind of way that it does about movies and TV shows and books and, you know, audio dramas and radio shows. And, you know, we are a bootstrapping, fledgling community, but it's happening. It's starting. It feels like a thing.
You know, you get people who analyze plays and you get people who analyze scores. What we're doing is we're analyzing them both together.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. That's important. And we're legit people.
Yeah. And we're doing it
out to the choir.
Right. Exactly. But like to do it outside of the context of either creating the art, being someone who's making a musical, or explicitly critiquing particular performances, like someone who's writing a newspaper review. But, you know, to be the intellectual counterpart to the fanzine's trash, and like not that there's anything wrong with just loving these things, but then to be able to talk and analyze and discuss and improve, it feels like it furthers the art form. It feels like it's fodder for the next things to happen. What makes these things successful? They can't just exist accidentally.
Well, that's it. The more you delve into something, the more you work out why this is legitimate and why this is art, then you can emulate that in your own voice.
Yeah. You know?
And we are starting to see that. It's creeping out.
It's really nice. And like to just see the people, you know, we know who you are. We talk about you behind your backs, but in nice ways.
We do. Yeah, we do. A lot
like,
of the time.
The people who comment every week, the people who we see make it, you know, doing the stuff on Reddit and starting their own YouTube channels or their own commentary blogs or whatever. Go do it. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
We literally stalk and read it all. So,
everything.
Like, this is it. We just want to have the conversation. We ain't the be all and end all. And I would hate that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I would hate that. So come and chat to us. Let's all have a big loving
about Heathers.
How exciting.
I'm interested to know the things and the structure of the musical that people have problems with, if they exist.
We want to find where are the flaws. We want to go right to the negative.
I feel like they always exist and you can always point them out, but I really struggle finding them in Heathers. You know, and like I can talk for 15 minutes about crappy rhymes in City of Angels, so if I can't find them in Heathers, it's interesting to me.
Exactly. May there be rose tinted glasses.
Perhaps. Who knows?
Exactly. Because I think one of the things that we're going to start doing, and we've had a chat about this, I feel like we're like talking to them as if like
as if like we're like completely separate entities that never interact. I know, it's weird.
Right, exactly. So we've had a chat about it. And one of the things that we would love to do is, for people who might not have read it and aren't being able to participate in the discussion, is kind of bring that discussion that we're having into the podcast.
Yeah.
Because there's really, really interesting stuff. Like, I'm finding out loads.
Yeah.
People's experiences, people's thoughts, opinions, facts. We love it. Absolutely love it all. So, yeah, we're going to maybe at the start of some podcast, if we've had some particularly great discussion on a previous episode, we might start doing that. So,
who knows? No promises. Y'all know how we are at follow-up.
Yeah, exactly.
But like,
please.
Maybe we'll start a couple episodes with some Reddit comments or follow-up about things that we didn't know about.
If they're high quality. So come and make some high quality stuff.
Seems like a
but
dare.
You can also
Jimmy.
Post like nonsense as well. I know. Post some nonsense as well. That's fun. But yeah, just come and join us, because this is really the best way for us to chat. Like, Twitter's all well and good, but 140 characters for this waffler, please.
No good. Yeah, no, Reddit looks,
God, if you
lets
look at my
Throckney
Opera breakdown, it's like 5,000 words or something. It's ridiculous. Yeah, so come chat.
Come chat. We'll see you there.
School may not ever end. Still, I miss you. I'd be honored if you'd let me be your friend.
My friend, we can be 17. We can learn how to chill. If no
was Heather's The Musical.
Yay. Woo! So I'm so excited to edit this, because I get to like listen to it all. But it's annoying because I think we've only got like 3 or 4 song breaks.
Yeah.
So I might just put 3
just add the whole album at the end. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just every other word. Just that'd be funny. Not tedious at all. But anyway,
I've got
enough about Heather's. That's nonsense.
I've got a quiz question for you, Jimmy. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
One of the most popular songs from this musical has been parodied in pretty much every context. It will help you learn about the chemical elements or nations of the world, or even what college majors exist. What musical could that possibly be?
I also noticed you said musical very pointedly.
It was almost as if it had inverted commas around it.
Maybe that's a clue. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can. We've already talked about it, but we're still going to tell you how.
Here we go.
Come and find me over on Twitter, at AsInHendrix, or YouTube, at the same name.
And I'm Musical Mash on Twitter, or Musical Theater Mash on YouTube. Or you can check out our show Twitter, Jim and Tomic, or our website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to the Reddit discussion where I know you all already are just commenting away.
Exactly. And if you don't even want to go, we never say this, so if you don't want to go to the website, that's okay. Just jump straight over to r/musicalmash.
And you'll see it.
That rhymed. r/musicalmash.
It's basically percentage wise.
Sorry, I was hoping you would just keep going.
That was beautiful. That was stunning. It might as well be r/JimandTomic at this point sometimes.
Yeah, but that's okay. You still get comments in your videos?
I do. I appreciate every single one of them.
Yep. And we would very much love it if you enjoy this podcast, if you would let your friends know all about it, and they can join in the chat too.
Yeah. And
let's create the conversation. Let's start a revolution.
Let's be the conversation. We are the conversation, Jimmy.
Yes, love it.
You, dear listener, are also the conversation.
You are. You're the best bit about it.
Yeah.
Goodness. And we will see you next week, you lovely people.
Adios.
What are you eating?
cheese.
Well, just pure cheese.
Pure cheese.
Pure delicious. Cheese, man.
Do we get what? I'm sorry.
I was just gonna do my Glaswegian accent again. Pure cheese.
Do you have good cheese in Scotland?
Not Scotland. I don't think there's any like Scottish cheese. Quite a lot of our good cheese gets made in Yorkshire in the Dales.
Okay.
So like Wensleydale. I don't know if you get that.
Wensleydale. Isn't that what the moon is made out of?
Yeah, it's made out of Wensleydale. Cracking cheese, Gromit.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.